The Fan on Demand.
Of July. And Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown.
Jeff the Infallible.
I don't know about that. That voice you hear is the one and only Dave Perkins of No Fixed Address. Be my co-host for the whole show. So you're in early today. You're in for the hour. I was going to take calls.
1 hour.
Now I'm going to have to take calls.
Well, I'm only here for an hour.
Wait a minute. He's only here for an hour?
I don't know who my relief is.
Well, who the hell's in from 5 to 7? Oh, Ken Reed.
Ken Reed. Former head of Alpine Canada and
Ken Reed. He was a very interesting guy. Who, Ken Reed or the Alpine Canada guy? Both of them. Okay.
Both of them. Both.
He was at a baseball game last night, in case you didn't know. I know Tim and Sid spent 7 hours talking about it this
afternoon. I saw Tim and Ivanka were in the stands because they kept showing them.
Yeah, of course. Well, they were showing Ivanka. The others just happened to be
kind of like
there.
When you watch the World Series and then Fox shows all these people from Fox TV series. Right. So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Sid Sixero was there, too. And anyhow, it was for a very good cause. A guy ponied up $7,000 to watch a game with him for the Jays Care Foundation. So there you go.
Congratulations to him. I hope he enjoyed it.
I'm sure he did. He got to see the Jays win 7-3. And as you called it, accurately, after slagging Jose Reyes for about 30 minutes.
He'd kind of have a big game last night.
He did.
Because he, every now and then he has a real big game. Every couple of weeks he has a, you know, three RBIs or three runs or something game. He's a teaser that way. But it was good to see. I mean, but you know yourself, the night before they lose 14-1, people overreact to scores.
No.
But one game doesn't really, you know, you can't overreact to one game, good or bad. If they'd won 14-1 and come back and lost last night, it would be exactly this. They'd be in the same position today. You know, it's just, baseball's a funny game that way. Momentum lasts as long as you're starting pitcher.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's why it's a sport basically unlike any other because of the day-to-day. You know, I hesitate to use the word momentum, but the day-to-day swings in fortune, shall we say.
The great John Lowe, Detroit Free Press reporter, once told me that the essence of baseball, he didn't use that word, but I used it. But there's a certain element of truth that it's the one sport where the defense has possession of the ball. And you think about it, maybe cricket. But when you think about it, the first act of a baseball game is me stopping you from doing anything offensive.
To do mine.
I mean, I don't know if that's particularly deep, but it does explain a lot of things about baseball. And the Jays, John Gibbons pulled a lineup out of his hat last night. Had Ryan Goins, Munenori Kawasaki playing third, Anthony Gose in center, Colby Rasmus DHing. We're going to be joined, by the way, later in the show by Colby's dad, Tony.
Yeah, that's a guy who's cost himself a ton of money this year.
Yeah.
You'd have to think. I mean, he started the season as the everyday center fielder, and now he's a platoon DH.
Yes.
It's getting hurt, obviously, doesn't help the situation, but neither did his play for the most part.
So we'll have a lot of baseball talk today.
Good.
John Morosi of Fox Sports.
Well, it's baseball season.
Brunt's going to join us. We'll talk a little baseball. Wilner will join us at 4:15. At 5:15, Kevin Martin and Jennifer Jones, curlers in studio.
In studio.
They're here for a player summit on the Grand Slam of Curling, which is a Sportsnet property. And so we'll be able to talk curling with them. I used to curl, so that's good.
Yeah. I've done curling in a few Olympics and a few Olympic trials, and I always enjoyed covering curling.
And the Briar.
No, I never did a Briar. It was always tended to be during spring training.
Yeah. The Briar is the toughest test on a reporter's liver
as
possible.
There are a few of those, but
this is particularly
bad. Is one of them, yeah.
This is particularly bad.
And a lot of that, the degree of difficulty depends on where it's held, too.
Yeah, that is
true. If it's in the Maritimes, it's...
If it's in the Maritimes, it's one of those...
Buckle up.
It's one of those events where it is possible to drink yourself sober.
Well, you know...
The Briar.
You go to the Maritimes for almost anything... as a reporter, and after 3 days, you can't make a fist, right? I mean, basically, after 4 days, you're writing bad checks. You know, yeah. It's just
anyhow. So we'll have lots of curling. So we got curling, baseball. I mean, what else do you need in July?
Exactly.
What else do you need? You don't want to talk.
Exactly.
Talk hockey.
We won't even talk about Jason Whitlock and your pal.
He's my buddy.
Imagine people getting so upset about that.
That they would have him on a call-in show.
People get so upset. It sounds exactly like hockey coverage, right? Mm-hmm. Where basically all hockey coverage starts with where a guy's born.
Yep.
And if he's from Kingston or Red Deer, he's a great guy and a plucky guy and blah, blah, blah. But if he's from Pardubice or Oslo or something,
God help him if he's from. Yeah, God on, help guys. Him if he's from Saint Foy.
One guy with one opinion. There you People go. Get excited. Anyhow. Don't worry about him.
Well, yeah, but that's talk radio. We do.
I guess
we do that. It's Ari Dickey in the mound tonight for the Jays against Clay Buchholz, and. Yeah, we asked Joe Siddle in Baseball Central, what do you expect from Ari Dickey tonight? He just kind of, he's a knuckleball guy. Who knows what to expect from him? Joe, we brought up a good point, though. Talking about this with Joe off air. And it's kind of an interesting dilemma is the word. But if you were the Jays and you were in a one-game playoff right now, and we've talked about how good the rotation has been, blah, blah, blah. One game playoff right now. Who's your starter?
Stroman.
That's exactly what
for me anyway.
Mr. Siddle said exactly what I said. Good,
because he's got, to me, he's got the most electric stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. I love Burley's experience, and I love Dickey's potential upside. I mean, if he ever gets that thing, floating just right, and Dickey has pitched pretty well. He's a little more prone to home runs, but he's pitched better than his record would indicate. But if you were talking one game shot. It's all hands on deck, obviously, but I'm starting Stroman.
Yeah. Well, we spoke about that exactly. I mean, you can make the case that he is their most impressive starting pitcher right now. As you say, and there's nothing wrong with Burley, but Stroman is, and he gets the ball tomorrow afternoon in an afternoon game against Ruby De La Rosa, which should be a pretty good yeah. game. But
De La Rosa's had a couple of... Very nice starts.
Yeah, but right now I'm thinking Stroman's probably my guy if I have to win one game.
Well, on a one game shot, obviously it depends whose day it all falls on. But yeah, it's an interesting. Zahn made a point one day last week when they were getting beat by Yu Darvish.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was Friday, maybe.
Yes.
That if they get into a short series, the Jays really don't have. A guy to match up.
Yep.
You know what I mean? With a Darvish or a couple of the Oakland guys. I'm not so sure Baltimore does. And I'm definitely sure the Yankees don't unless they somehow get Tanaka back, which I'm not sure.
Yeah, the only
one expects him back, but
no. I mean the only teams in the East that have that.
Tampa's
got Boston. And Boston's got
and Lester,
the one guy.
Right.
Tampa's got
correct. But if it gets down to one game,
Yeah, no, it really is true. To me, it just kind of reinforces.
If you're Baltimore, you're probably looking at Gausman the way we're looking at Stroman. He's been very impressive. I've seen him three times, I think.
You mentioned it's Dave Perkins and Jeff Blair, by the way, for your listening and viewing pleasure on Primetime Sports. Ken Reed will join us at 5 o'clock. Will join me at 5 o'clock, and Mike Wilner will join us, talk Little Jays at 4:15. Neglected to talk about this yesterday because we had a lot to talk about, but... David Waldstein of the New York Times had an article yesterday that kind of caught my attention. I really wanted to get your take on it because you covered a crap load of baseball. But it was Yu Darvish talking to the Japanese media at the All-Star game.
Oh, I read about this is about the sixth day.
They started talking about the amount of pitching injuries in the game and essentially the conversation got started. It was about Masahiro Tanaka and Yu Darvish. And this is really odd because usually the Japanese players, Japanese pitchers usually aren't, they don't make sort of big picture pronouncements for whatever reason when they've been over here, they don't. But Darvish made the point that maybe it's time to start considering a six-man rotation like they have in Japan. where essentially each roster is 28 players, and before each game, a manager has to declare three players ineligible. One of them, usually, the guy who's pitched the day before. But Darvish's point was, you know, they've looked at other things, they've thought about other things. Maybe people need to throw more. Maybe and when you look at it, there is a certain amount of logic to it. I don't know if it's good for developing pitchers necessarily, but the idea, and Darvish said this is probably would probably never fly in North America, but the idea that you essentially pitch once a week, when I look at these injuries, I'm going, you know, they tried everything else.
Too big a sea change, I would say, for it to ever be accepted, because it makes too much sense. But it's too big a sea change, going 25 to 28, declaring guys ineligible, expanding the number of starters, which would also cut down the number of bullpen guys.
Yes, it would.
Right? Because presumably, if you're only pitching every 6 days or every 7 days, because in Japan they get every Monday, I think
they
it is
off. They
get
every Monday off, yeah.
So each guy, like they have the Tuesday pitcher, the Sunday pitcher, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Too big a sea change. Mm-hmm. I just can't see it happening here. Baseball needs to be dragged, kicking and screaming every inch forward. You know that. You've been around it a long time. And for one thing, the owners, now if they got a 28-man roster, now they got to pay 35 guys. You know what I mean? Because you start counting the DLs, because the hamstrings are still going to pop, and the bobos are still going to happen, as they do with increasing frequency. So it's a lot more money that the owner's got to pay. I'm not so sure it wouldn't be workable in the long run, but I bet you if you brought it in 10 years from now, all these guys would be breaking down because somebody would want every one of them throwing 100 miles an hour because you only have to pitch once
That's
a week.
That's true,
now.
Yes.
So they'll be grinding these guys into the ground. It'll just be a different set of, a different kind of squeeze that does it. So there you are. That's my...
I'm almost coming to the conclusion, Dave, where I don't know if you can... I'm not necessarily one to run up the white flag, but I don't know if you can really do anything about it right now.
No. Well, the only thing I've ever said could change everything, and this would also be a huge sea change, but not as drastic as the one we just talked about, is for everybody to call the strike zone the way it's written. And all of a sudden, we're going back to the strike zone that's a real strike zone. So that means anything above the waist is not automatically a ball. The strike zone comes up to, the letters like it's supposed to. And it's as wide as the plate. And, guys are going to know they got to go up there swinging because borderline pitches are going to be strikes. You know, what they used to take, they knew was a strike, but it was always called a ball. Well, now they're going to know that that's a strike.
Yeah, it's that to me is the obvious. I mean, if you want to at least start addressing the situation,
make it easier to throw strikes so you don't have to throw 98.
Yeah,
and the way to make it easier to throw strikes is to call the strikes on the way it's written.
Because in terms of pitching development, and that I mean, it doesn't matter what you do, you're still not going to know how abused a guy is when he gets up to the majors.
Correct.
You can chart him in high school, but you know what he's doing between.
You don't know what he did when he was 13 or 14 or 15 years old.
Yeah.
Which is when I believe that the seeds of rot are sown. The best kids are overused. Pitch too much, pitch too long in games. They pitch in tournaments where they pitch on Fridays and come back on Sundays and this kind of thing.
Yeah, but it was interesting hearing. I'll give him credit. At least he's got an idea.
Yeah, well,
at least he's got an idea.
Good for Darvish. It's great to hear. It's like we talked yesterday about new stats. It's great to hear more information on any subject. Doesn't mean you have to absorb it all. It doesn't mean you have to act on everything you hear. But it's the more information you get, the better decision you're going to make.
Yeah. And my first reaction was to the economics of it. I mean, teams are already bringing up. The Jays are probably going to go through 44 guys by the time the year is done.
And they're paying money to.
What, Baltimore in 2012 had 52 different 52 different players and pitchers in order to win the American League East. But it makes as much sense as some of the other stuff I've heard. Although Dr. Ron Taylor, who you know very well, we talked about this at a Jays game, and we got into a conversation about the mound, And because Tom Verducci or somebody had written an article saying they thought that maybe lowering the mound might help pitching injuries. And, I mean, there's medical – you can talk to medical people. You put four of them in one room. Two will say it'll help. Two will say it won't help.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, and there's no hard science on this, but when the mound used to be 14 inches up to 1968, mm-hmm. and the Denny McLeans were winning 31 games and Bob Gibson had an ERA of 1.12 and – Drysdale, 58 and two-thirds score, that kind of stuff. That was off a higher mound. Those guys didn't get hurt as often.
No.
But they didn't throw 95 with waste pitches either.
No.
So it's an apples and orange thing. You can, whatever way you want to believe, you can mm-hmm. support it with, you know, data. But
like I said, I found it. I'll credit you, Darvish, with at least having an idea.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I can remember talking to John Farrell about this back when we were talking 4 years ago, and the Cleveland Indians. He was their farm director. The Cleveland Indians were one of the first teams to bring in sort of diagnostics, and essentially, you know, like the stick figure thing. Get a diagnostic read in all the pitchers.
Yeah.
And I said to John, I don't know why everybody in baseball doesn't have this, and his response is kind of interesting because it kind of gets into the mindset of baseball. He said, you know, sometimes it's be careful what you know. You know, you might have a little too much information about a guy. Does it look like he's going to blow out in 2 years? Well, then if I'm a manager, what do I do? Do I only use him 5 innings today instead of 6? But
and some people don't want to know. It's, you know, it's like if you hear a rattle in your car, some people just turn up the radio.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm that. I do that. Yeah. Let's see if Mike Wilner does that. Mike Wilner joins us from the Rogers Center. How are you, Mr. Wilner?
I'm all right, Jeffrey. David, how are you boys?
We are doing well. 7-3 last night for the locals after a, 14-1 the night before.
Yep.
J-Hap, good J-Hap showed up last night.
Not just good J-Hap.
Well, he was incredible, J-Hap. Somebody called J-Hap. Him on the website. Somebody called him incredible, which
there's fantastic J-Hap, and there's awful J-Hap. Mm.
There's a left-hander who throws 94-95 J-Hap. That's what we saw. That's what we saw last night. Any news today from the manager session about anything? Any injuries? Any DFAs? Any DFAs or SFAs or anything?
No DFAs, no SOLs, no nothing like that. It's still going on right now. You guys pulled me out of it, but I'm more than happy, of course, to spend some time with you. He was talking about the injured guys, Adam Lind and Brett Laurie and Edwin Encarnacion, and he actually said that Lind and Edwin may skip rehab assignments. They may just go directly to the big leagues as soon as they're mm-hmm. capable. Desperate times call for desperate measures, as he said. So they're moving pretty quickly. And Alex Anthopoulos the other day said that they might be able to be sent out on rehab games by the weekend, which means, you know, maybe they might join the Blue Jays in New York the weekend.
They probably got theater tickets, you know. Nobody wants to miss a weekend in New York.
Yeah, it's true, especially with a Saturday afternoon game. You can go Broadway at night, for sure.
There you go. John Gibbons did say on Baseball Central today, Mike, that he thought that that there was a chance that they would both be with the team in the weekend, certainly by the time the Jays come back from that little trip, which is certainly good news. Although, I mean, I've got to say, I mean, Dave and I were talking about it last night. I thought the lineup the manager put together last night and the performance he got, that looked a little bit like the Jays team we were seeing in May. When you look at the stuff that was happening at the bottom of the order, when you look at the fact that Jose Reyes was interested and you had some good defense as well.
Jose Reyes was interested?
Yeah.
He usually isn't?
No, sometimes he takes time off, Mike.
I don't know about that. He's been hitting 300 since the first week of May. And
he takes time off every now and then.
I don't believe that.
Take your rose-colored glasses.
But you know what? I think the same. I thought the same thing about the lineup on Sunday mm-hmm. Against the Rangers, about how well it worked and how exciting things were getting and that kind of thing. And look, you're in any port in a storm mode with your 4, 5, 6 hitters out, and you got to try to figure things out as best you can. Anthony Gose is in the lineup again today in right field, batting ninth, and Jose Bautista's playing first, and Deonor Navarro is DHing because he's been swinging the bat so well, and Josh Tolley has to catch with R.A. Dickey pitching. So they're trying again, and you know, it doesn't look like a very powerful lineup, especially from six down. where it's Kawasaki, totally Goins Ghost, but those guys at the bottom can do some things, and Ghost has been wreaking a little bit of havoc lately, and Colby Rasmus has been stealing bases lately after no stolen bases since 2012. He has three in the last four games.
He's so, tied with Jose Molina now.
Molina got his third last night. It's true. And tomorrow's only two back. But yeah, they're trying to make some things happen.
Let's ask Wilner the same question we just talked about. This is all theoretical, of course, but if you're in a one-game playoff, who's your starter?
Whoever's turn it is. I don't think you can ever, you know, try to plan for that because you wind up being in a one-game playoff, you're...
Come on, have some fun with us, Mike. Jeez, man. Play the game.
If you... It's
theoretical.
If you had your choice right now...
Yep.
Stroman.
There you go. Was that so hard?
We've all said exactly the same thing.
We've all said the same thing.
I don't know if that'll still be the case at the end of September.
No, that's why.
But, Mike, we're just...
Right, but, I mean, is he going to keep this up? You hope he can. That's what I mean. Is I don't know if he's still going to be the choice if you had that choice on September 30th. Maybe R.A. Dickey, who's been going really, really well his last six or seven starts, continues, and you're playing in a big ballpark. If you're in Seattle, I'm starting R.A. Dickey in that game. But maybe Burley is the choice. I can't imagine it would be Hutch or Happ. But right now, Stroman's the best starting pitcher they've got.
Yeah, nice stuff.
Mike, do the Jays have any interest in Darwin Barney that we're aware of?
I doubt it. He's got a 290 on base. He's a good glove at second, but they already have a couple of good gloves at second base. I know he's a right-handed hitter, but he doesn't hit very well. And mm-hmm. They don't need another guy who doesn't hit very well. in a couple of weeks, Brett Laurie will be back. So Steve Tolleson will be your second baseman against lefties, and he's got 1,000 OPS against lefties. Darwin Barney's a guy they don't need. Just like Chase Headley, by the way, was a guy they don't need.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Like I was telling people, the Jays don't need a project right now, although the project looked pretty good last night.
Well, he was 1-for-4 last night. That one came at a pretty big time, but you know, he had an opportunity to walk it off in the 12th also and didn't come through. And it's tough. When J.P. Arencibia hits an extra inning home run and you don't win, That's got to be pretty tough.
Tell me, I had a parlay under Texas last night.
but Headley, for me, I mean, yeah, he's a project. But two, he has a herniated disc in his back, and you want to put him on turf?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good combination.
No, and I mean, one of the things when Alex was on with us yesterday, we talked about Chase Headley, and he admitted, look, there's an element of risk in everybody you pick up, but there's risk, and then there's risk, right? And the guy with the... guy with a back problem like that on artificial turf, that's a big risk.
Right. When you pick up a guy who you know may have a propensity to get injured, that's one thing. When you pick up a guy who's already hurt and you're going to put him on turf, and that's just no. It's just there's nothing that can come of that.
Mm. So Sergio Santos cleared, and he will be going down to Buffalo,
where he will be a priority guy, says Alex Anthopoulos.
So what the hell does that mean?
That means get him as many innings as you can, as often as you can, to try to get him turned around as quickly as you can. It's the Blue Jays' mindset on him has changed from, boy, I hope he gets claimed, to, boy, I hope he can turn it around.
But there's absolutely nothing he could do that would make them pick up his option. Right?
Unless he has an August and September like he did last year. You know, last 2 months, I think it was something like 28 innings with a whip of about 0.7, striking out a guy per inning, and he was absolutely dominant. Now, granted, those are the only two really good months he's had in 3 years here. But if he does that again, then maybe. But
yeah, but what's the option
mark? Big maybe. What's the option? Six?
Yeah, it's almost seven, isn't it? And the buyout's 750.
Right.
So there's no possibility they're going to give him $6 million plus. I don't care if he has a whip of zero. That is
if he has a whip of zero, he gets picked up.
But still let somebody else deal with him, right?
Or you bring him back.
Or you bring him back for less money.
That on the open market.
Right? Now we're talking about bringing him back for less money. That's a little different story.
Sure.
no chance.
Gets picked. It's Mike Wilner joining Jeff Blair and Dave Perkins on Primetime Sports. Ari Dickey gets the call tonight for the Blue Jays. You know, we know what that means. Again, we talk about good Hap or great Hap. I mean, you can get Ari with the good knuckleball or Ari with the flat knuckleball. But, you know, taking a look at some of Ari's numbers, Mike, do you think people are beginning to become a little sort of more comfortable with what he is? You know, I think people have moved beyond the point now of thinking he's going to win a Cy Young in the American League and he's, you know, the absolute dominant ace. I think people in this city, anyhow, have become a little more comfortable with him. Do you not think so?
I don't know. Not the people who talk to me, I don't think. I think that there's value in having a guy who will throw 200 innings and have an ERA around 4 and stuff like that. And that's what R.A. Dickey is. But I think you're right in that people have gone beyond expecting him to be a Cy Young-level pitcher, but I don't think they've gotten past what the Blue Jays gave up for him yet, even though, you know, Travis d'Arnaud's just been okay and hurt a lot, and Noah Syndergaard hasn't thrown a pitch in the major leagues. But I think that people are still thinking, you know, Blue Jays gave up what they gave up not to get a number three starter who's going to eat up innings for you, and that's what they wound up getting. Now, there's nothing wrong with what R.A. Dickey has provided, and I don't think yet that we're past the level of a great majority of fans thinking that he's an absolute bust. I mean, I had people after his last start suggesting that he be sent down.
Yeah.
All those nutty listeners. You'll know this one, Mike. Morrow, he's in for, what's his buyout? It's a million, isn't it?
One or two?
I think it's one.
It's a million. It's a million.
What's his number next year? Is it 8 this
10.
Year?
Ten next year.
So there's another guy that there's no way they're bringing him back for 10, think, right?
Yeah, it seems doubtful.
But maybe they
can. Although, you know what, last year I was kind of advocating giving Josh Johnson the qualifying offer and bringing him back at 14 because just to make yourself the only suitor when everybody else was going to be in on him at 8. So,
good thing they didn't listen to you.
Yeah, no kidding. But the same thing with Morrow. I mean, if he comes back over the last 6 weeks and makes 10 good starts and someone's going to give him 5 or 6 on a rebuild his value type of deal, then why not just give him the 10 to make sure you get to keep him?
Wow.
I don't know. Because now you're counting on him. That's why.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up like you did this year, you know, coming out of spring training, say, well, we're counting on this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy, and that'll be our rotation. And then, you know, they patch it together and then bring up a couple of kids and they fit and that kind of stuff. But you don't want to be counting on guys who you can't really rely on.
Yeah, but I don't know when who you can rely on other than Mark Burley, who's like a freak of nature.
Well, Dickey's been a reliable guy.
Yeah, and Dickey can't have to have Tommy John. So
and I think at this
too, right?
At this point, you can pencil in Stroman and Hutchison next year, you know, provided the creek don't rise in the next 2 months. But
yeah,
I think
so.
You kind of know what you're getting there.
Right. But I think with Morrow, when you look back at what's happened to him, they've all been these just weird freak injuries, right? There was an oblique strain, and there was a radial nerve impingement, and now it's a
tendon sheath.
I can't even remember what
it's
called it.
It's a tendon sheath.
But it's a pulley. That's what it is. It's the A4 pulley that he's torn.
Ooh, that sounds bad.
In his finger. So, you know, there's no pattern, and maybe you can say, he's more susceptible to the freak injury, though I don't necessarily know why. But I don't know that, you know, it's not like elbow after elbow after elbow or shoulder that's been bugging him for years. These are the weird different things. And, it makes me think anyway that there's a shot that 1 year it doesn't happen.
That's the way it was with Halliday too, right? All his injuries were kind of weirdos because he'd get hit by line drives because he was a lousy fielder and break his leg, that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah.
But it wasn't shoulders and elbows for the most part, yeah.
Wilner, I know that you're going to run and talk to the skipper when he does his
too late.
Electronic.
Right now, we got go, the, The great Travis McKenzie is in there.
Is he? There you go. He'll ask the tough question.
Yes, he will.
Just make sure that he has the microphone or the tape recorder turned on this time. Mike, thanks for doing this as always.
Thank you, boys.
All righty. That is the third man in the booth, Mike Wilner. He and Joe Siddle and Jerry Howarth will have the call of the game for you tonight as the Jays and the Boston Red Sox play the third of a four-game series. R.A. Dickey against Clay Buchholz. Mañana, it is Marcus Stroman against Ruby De La Rosa. And that's a day game.
You know, when we were talking about the Jays' potential free agents, and we know Cabrera and Rasmus and Jansen and Morrow and blah, blah, blah. Guy who's done himself a lot of good this year has been J.A. Happ.
Absolutely.
Right? Because he's making, what, five? And
they've got an option in him, too.
They have an option on him.
They have an option
him,
on
right?
him. Yeah. But it's like six and a half.
Yeah, it's a sizable option. But the way he's gone,
well,
they're going to have to pick that up.
Yeah, absolutely. They've they're in an interesting position going into next year because
they can blow a lot of money off.
They've got roughly, you could blow $45 million off the payroll just if Rasmus doesn't come back and Melky doesn't come.
But you remember, you also got Lori going to arbitration,
right? And Reyes, I don't know how much that would
Reyes
kill
goes
you
from 16 to 22.
Right,
which
Burley
is
flat. Encarnacion and Batista are pretty much,
and Encarnacion goes up $1 million.
Yeah.
I think Batista's the same.
Yeah, so there is some room.
They're in 70. I think there's 70 or 71 million for the first five guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you... there's Lind. Yeah, and I think they may take a shot at trying to re-sign Melky. I don't think it's going to matter.
And you've got other little arbitration guys like
Cecil.
And guys like that.
Yeah.
I don't mean little, but you know what I mean, like smaller awards.
Yeah. Alex does have a little bit of wiggle room.
Yeah.
You're right. If the season ends right now,
well, is there
you have to make a call on Hap.
Is there any team in the American League who wouldn't give him $6 million right now?
No, I don't think so. I think teams would give him, why wouldn't you?
Absolutely. If you've done it in the American League,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Teams will buy.
I can see somebody giving him $6 million. We're going to call an audible here. Brent's going to join us later. We have Jennifer Jones and Kevin Martin around here, so they're going to join us in studio. We're going to talk a little curling when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. It is Jeff Blair and Dave Perkins. McCown will be back in a little more than a week, so relax, everybody. He's just on holidays. One of Sportsnet's properties is the Grand Slam of Curling, and we're lucky today because there was a player summit on the Grand Slam of Curling. It's always good, I think, to get the player's point of view on a sport when you're putting together a TV property. And we're very lucky to be joined in studio by Jennifer Jones, Olympic gold medal winner, Kevin Martin, another Olympic gold medal winner, who's not a player anymore, but a retired player.
So that's
we
right.
got
yeah,
former player right. and current player.
Curling
Welcome.
Royalty. Will
Curling say, royalty yeah. will suffice. And talk to me a little bit about your involvement with the Grand Slam of Curling. You made the point that it's probably a good thing to get the point of view or get input from the people who are actually competing in an event when you're getting it ready.
It is. It is. I've been very involved with the whole Grand Slam property from the very start, and now with Sportsnet and Rogers purchasing the property for myself, being involved corporately now and doing the telecast, the analyst job. It's a very exciting thing for me to be involved in it, and then this week having the players come and just getting from the ideas from the young players coming up, the ones that are going to be around for the next 20 years. It really does set the path.
Jennifer, the idea that you're having some input into this, I'll ask you, is it a technical input as well? I mean, are we going to get down to the nuts and bolts as to what cameras work for you guys? You know, what sort of being mic'd up, does it work for you guys? Will it get down to that sort of level as well, Jennifer?
We pretty much talked about everything today. It was amazing that they flew a bunch of the players in and they wanted our input. They wanted to ask us how they could make it bigger and better and grow it. And we talked about format. We talked about even just the in-venue experience and trying to make it different and more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And so we as players said, you know, we're up for anything. Just give it a try. And we're more than willing to participate.
We were talking a little bit earlier about how curling has become almost a year-round exercise. And A, did you ever think you would see that? And B, is it going to be a young person's game because of it going forward?
The sport has become 12 months. For the last while, I think it's mostly the Olympic process that did that. You start out in May now training. Most of the teams will train 2 to 3 hours, 5 days a week in the gym. And then when the season starts, which is going to be going forward late August, early September, right through to May, it is a 12-month season. You've got to be dedicated and you've got to be all in. Mm-hmm. And it never used to be like that.
And you won't be able to hold an outside job?
Yeah, it's going to become more and more challenging for sure. It's so much time away and to really focus and to give it an A-plus effort and to be able to compete around the world, you need to train 12 months a year and it's a ton of time, but we love to do it. So you're doing what you love to do, but it is definitely evolving.
Jennifer Jones and Kevin Martin joining us in Primetime Sports. We talked a little bit about this as well off the air. The influence of the Olympics on curling, it is essentially, as you've both said, it's turned almost everything into a four-year cycle, hasn't it?
Now in curling, the Olympic process has taken over. Mm-hmm. And so it's a four-year process. You try to build your team. You're thinking about everything in a four-year block. And when that four years ends, okay, are we going to stick together for four more years or not? Because if it's not, you're done.
Yeah.
In that second. And now you're worried about four more years and... the sport just never used to be that way.
Yeah.
It's absolutely about 4 years. Even for us, we just won the Olympic gold medal and we sat down and said, look, are we in for another 4 years? It wasn't, are we going to play for 1 year or 2 years? It's, are we going to try to do this again? Because if not, if you're not all on board, then some of the players might have wanted to do 4 years. So you make that 4 year commitment. It's all about the Olympics right now. And it's all about trying to get those points to qualify and to compete in the Grand Slam events so that you can improve and become an Olympic gold medalist.
And as you mentioned, it's awfully hard. I mean, life does get in the way sometimes, right? It's one thing to make a four-year commitment, but, man, a lot can change over 4 years.
Have the world championships diminished because of the rise of the Olympics?
I really do think it has, actually, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing for me to say or not. I'm not sure how that's going to come across to everybody.
No, that's a fair point.
Yeah. You know, I think that's true. And that's why the events like the Grand Slams are becoming so popular and why they're expanding and why they're growing is because the teams from around the world are trying very, very hard to get as good as the Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on. They're chasing. And the Slams have given that possibility to all the teams around the world because you're playing on perfect ice conditions, arena settings, the best teams in the world, banging heads many, many weeks of the year, like the Olympic Games. And that's why those events are becoming so popular.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I bet if, and this is just me supposing here, but I would imagine, Jennifer, that if you asked the hardcore curler, the person who's down at the St. Vitale Club every night and they're down
I'm
watching. I grew up in Morden.
Oh, yeah,
I know
there
my,
you go.
I've been to the Granite Club. I've thrown rocks there. But if those people, I would imagine the world championship, would it mean a little more to them than whereas the average Canadian who may just watch curling during the Olympics would kind of assume that the Olympics are the be-all and end-all?
I think the Olympics are bigger than the world championships for every Canadian because the Olympics are the biggest sporting event in the world. They come along once every 4 years. And so there's this passion and patriotism that goes along with the Olympics that I love the Olympics. It was so amazing to me to be a spectator and then to actually compete. You realize even how much bigger it is. I don't know if Kevin would agree with that, but it's just this amazing event. But not to take away from the World Championships, when you're going to the World Championship and representing Canada, it's the biggest honor in the world. But the Olympics just takes it to that new level that you didn't even know existed until you were there.
Well, I was going to say, as you look back on your Olympic experiences, your gold medal is a little more in the rearview mirror. How has it changed you? Did it change you in any way?
I personality wise, I don't think so. No. It certainly changed your path. Mm-hmm. I don't think you do it on purpose.
I bet it changed your time management.
It certainly did for at least a couple of years. Yeah. Where all of a sudden you're trying to your time. You know what? Honestly, and I'm sure you guys are going through that. The time's not your own at all.
Right.
For at least a couple of years, everything gets turned upside down, and I guess with that, turning your world upside down, it changes your entire life path. But the family just, it's the way it goes. And, mm-hmm. It's a great change to have to make.
Yeah.
Is there any concern on the part of either of you? And unfortunately, we just got a few minutes left. But is there any concern in either part of you that some of the things that made curling so special to a lot of people might get lost the bigger it gets? Jennifer, is that?
I don't think so. I'm pretty grassroots, and I don't think there's anybody that loves curling more than I do. And there's a special thing in Canadian curling that you don't even see elsewhere around the world that we have not lost. Mm-hmm. And it has grown so much in the Olympics. It's now been since 98 that it's been an official Olympic sport, and it's just been growing and growing and growing. But that love and that passion and that desire for our grassroots of Canadian curling has never, ever left. And I think that's what makes it special and why people connect with it.
Kevin, do you feel?
Every small town in Canada still has the club where Thursday night we can go to any little town, go in there, their homemade hamburgers, and you go right back
club
to
sandwiches.
Get right back to the start, and it hasn't changed a bit. And, the people in a curling situation, they're good-hearted, hard-working people. Canadiana is there, and that's never going to change.
You're going to be an analyst. How is that going to be? Because you're going to be talking about friends, foes, people you like, maybe some people you don't like. You're going to be talking about them on TV. How's that going to be?
I still haven't heard you commentate our games from the Olympics. So.
Well, that's maybe best.
Yeah.
How's that going to be, though? Because it'll be, did you find that hard? And is the transition difficult for you?
No, it was really quite fun. Caitlin, in the Vancouver Olympics, actually looked after our kids and stayed at our house.
Mm-hmm.
And now one Olympics later, guess what? She's winning Olympic gold. So, there's some stories that can be told.
Right.
Because so many of the players, like Jennifer, and so many of the players are such good friends that there is a lot of inside information that, that you can talk about.
Sure.
And, some of the stuff that I can't talk about, well, I just don't. We'll leave that alone.
But a lot of your role is strategy is what you're going to be discussing a lot, isn't it? And you're obviously familiar with the strategy of a lot of different people here.
Yes, definitely. Any skip. Mm-hmm. Women's or men's that's current. I definitely know them personally and strategically and how they're going to call the game. And I think there's a benefit to that. I hope. I think so. But then we can get into other things, other parts of the game, from equipment to ice making to rink stuff. And all of that can fit into it, and it'll be a lot of fun.
When does the Grand Slam start this year?
First televised event. When is it? Because we went through all the dates today, but there's so many of them now.
It would be Selkirk, right?
Selkirk,
End of October, yep.
There you go. We'll look forward to your work on TV. And Jennifer, we'll look forward to seeing you curl.
Can't wait. Yeah, absolutely can't wait. And we're excited to hear Kevin on the broadcast.
And now everybody's going to be...
The pressure is on. We're heckling him already.
PR is on. It'll be great. Thanks for joining us, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Mr. Perkins, thanks for joining me.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Ken Reed will slide in the co-host chair. This is Primetime Sports and the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.